Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
I'm a member of a Red Sox nation. It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, I'm Fenway home. That's where I long to be. I'm a member of a Red Sox nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I fake a smile November until opening day. Suffering baseball withdrawal around the clock. When April comes, hey, meet me down on Yawkey Way. That's when Red Sox Nation starts to rock. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Bets podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball. For everyone staying up late tonight on Periscope, the podcast can be found on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Spreaker, Player FM, and wherever you can find it on Google. Red Sox just wrapped up Game 2 of the 2018 World Series with a 4-2 victory over the Los Angeles Dodgers. I am Terry Cushman, and I am joined, as always, by Jeremy Schilling and Liz Churchville. How are you guys doing?
Excellent.
Great.
Yeah. Why wouldn't we be? Red Sox are up 2-0. That's better than 2013. I think we were 1-1 after the second game, and then I think we actually got down, we were down 2-1 before basically running the table. So looking good as we head out into some warmer LA weather.
Yeah, this smells like, looks like, tastes like we might be the better team, clearly. I feel like we could be a little bit better in a couple of areas, but even given Sale's kind of limited start, we have been better out of the rotation. The bullpen's been better. This team is offensively, I just think, top to bottom better. One of the concerns we had in the Astros series was we felt like the Astros were the better lineup. On the lineup, enough game, timely hitting. The Fox broadcast has really highlighted the two-out hitting, which, you know, if you're going to get hits with two outs, especially with men on base or in scoring position, you know, you're going to win ball games. So, you know, I guess just as my leadoff point, it just seems like we're the clearly better team.
Yeah, it's hard to you know, to look at it any other way. You know, we're coming through in key spots and showing up, and I think we're making better contact with the baseball bat, getting on base, and Chris Sale grinded, you know, through his start, kept us in the game. David Price looked almost as good as he did in Houston, but still highly effective, especially in all but the fourth inning when things got a little dicey. But
well, I'd like to comment too on that Price start, especially given the fourth inning. But I was wanting to hear maybe Liz's opening thoughts.
My main thought, like the fourth with Price really was concerning to me. I was like, oh God, here we go. You know, what's going to happen now? But then when he came back in the fifth and just took care of it, pulled himself together, you know, he wasn't emotional. You know, he didn't let the fourth get to him. You know, after that, I was really, really pleased with that. And then for me, the main thing I keep thinking is how it seems like my biggest concern and why I didn't think the Red Sox were going to get this far, or one of the main reasons, is that bullpen. And the bullpen is really showing up. Like, for whatever weaknesses, you know, I felt like they had and that they were going to lose in big spots, they're definitely coming in and getting the job done. And I don't think we could ask for anything more, really, at this point.
Hey, Liz, I know you're a Rays fan. Could you just clue me in, and maybe, if I apologize if you've already kind of declared your allegiances, but who are you rooting for in the series?
Oh, man, my bracket got totally exploded, let me tell you. I mean, I really thought the Brewers were going. Just watching them play, I felt like they wanted it more, but then they really just kind of fell apart, you know, there at the end. And I was very sad that it's two big market teams. I really wanted, you know, someone that wasn't a big market team to go. But I was thinking it was going to be Astros Brewers. And boy, was I wrong, let me tell you. But the Red Sox are showing up. And I mean, I can't, particularly with the whole thing with the Astros cheating and all that, like that really started to put a bad taste in my mouth for them. And I was glad that, you know, that the Red Sox ended up coming out of that series winners, you know, because it, even if, you know, the Astros would have come out on top on that, it just wouldn't have felt right, you know, it just wouldn't have felt right to me. But,
all right, so yeah. First of all, some would say cheating, others, me, would say gamesmanship. But who are you rooting for in this particular series, if you don't mind me making you make a choice?
AKA putting her on the spot.
I'd have to pick the Red Sox. I really would. I mean, it's nice. It's weird because obviously they're a rival, the Rays, you know, they can't not be, but I mean, it's weird. My husband always says, you know, if your team isn't winning, you know, in the playoffs or whatever, then you always want to root for your division, which sounds weird, but in a way it makes your team look a little bit stronger in that way, you know, cause you played them so many games, and everything. So I'm kind of going to run with that. Plus, I don't know. I've just never really liked the Dodgers. I don't know what it is about them as a team. The only thing I ever liked about them was Vin Scully. And now that he's gone, I have absolutely no reason, you know, to like them at all. And, yeah, they're just not a likable team for me.
Well, your husband is a better man than I, because when my team loses, all I want to see is the world burn. So, you know, God bless his take there, because I disagree. I'm just such a child when my team loses. So you touched on a couple things before I kind of put you on the spot with your allegiances, and I do appreciate that. And I think the way you're rooting for the games, I mean, not that my opinion matters, it makes sense to me. I know you're from a small market town in Tampa, and it would make sense that you would root for other small markets, especially Milwaukee. And admittedly, it's a really, that roster is very, very likable, maybe except for the people that are hung up on Braun's issues with PEDs. So it makes complete sense to me. And if I put you on the spot, I apologize. Not my Not my intention, but I just wanted to know where we were going into this thing. You did touch on a couple things that I would like to kind of piggyback on because I feel like you made pretty good points there. The first was price, and you touched on the effect of the fourth actually having little effect as far as he pitched an additional two innings and it really gave the Sox a chance to win. I've come out strong to quite strong on how I feel about David Price. I think I've gone so far as to make fun of his dog Astro, which makes me not look so great today. But for all the times I've called him a bitch, he was the opposite of that today. I thought he really was he was a gamer. You know, for all of his failures, he came out, he was aggressive in the strike zone, got ahead of hitters. When he didn't, he pitched aggressively back into the strike zone and got outs while behind in the count. And then when the fourth came around and there was adversity and you know, he gave up the lead, it's like, okay, here's David Price. Like, he's not going to leave this game without giving up, like, a three-run home run and just completely putting us out of this game. The exact opposite happened. He found a way to get out of that with minimal damage. And then he pitched two really quick innings to the point where I was actually, and I think I tweeted this, I wanted him out in the seventh. I thought he was really, really good. Obviously, Cora had the complete pulse of the game and was 100% right per use on his bullpen move. So, but I give Price all the credit in the world for rebounding from that fourth inning. They got the lead. He came out, got quick outs again. Like, just all the credit in the world. I like I said, I've come out really strong, and if you listen to, I think it was like episode 90 or 87 or something like that, after game two of the ALDS, I really hammered him. And while I don't necessarily backtrack on those comments, I feel like he has significantly turned the corner, to the extent where if he has to pitch again in the series, and I don't think he will have to pitch again in the series, but if he does, I'm going to expect a similar outing here. And then the other thing you touched on just briefly, if I recall, was the effect of the bullpen. Coming into this playoffs, Terry and I talked about the 25-man roster and, like, even the fact that Kelly might not be on it. He's been on it, and he has been 100% difference maker in a positive direction. Like, I am completely blown away by not only the fact that he's pitching meaningful innings, high leverage situations, and he is absolutely fucking dominating. Tonight was just so impressive. He pitched with pace. He was almost kind of like dancing up there. Like, he dropped in a curveball and, like, he was already backpedaling to the rubber, getting the throw from the catcher, just ready to go. And, that was, I mean, at this point, again, I'm reversing course where I'm not surprised by the performance, but I'm almost expecting it moving forward. And then this whole Rover thing with Evaldi tonight, I mean, it almost looks Cora, like, he's playing, he's playing a different game. Like, for whatever reason, he is using this roster to the absolute max where he doesn't have to use people he doesn't trust because he's now developed this quote-unquote Rover, you know, bullpen position. And then again, Terry's come out strong to quite strong against Kimbrel. I haven't necessarily disagreed, but he's been lights out. So it's been unbelievable. Again, it feels like this seems like it might be the Red Sox year.
I mean, they always say, I mean, everything's different in the playoffs, and they're proving that. They're proving that. I wanted to mention, just while you were saying, while you mentioned Vasquez, something really interesting, and admittedly, like, I haven't until recently been paying super attention, like, to the Red Sox, so excuse me if he does this all the time, but something really cool I noticed when he was catching Price anyway. I didn't so much notice it with any of the bullpen, but he would set himself up a little bit on the outside, and then right before Price would throw, he would jump into the inside with I think right-handed batters. I can't even remember, but it was so neat just to see him manipulate, you know, the strike zone that way, or manipulate the ball, or whatever. I don't know. It was just, I've never seen a catcher like I've seen them lean, I've seen them do things, but he would set himself up on the outside and then just take a little, just hop over and just catch a ball, and it would always be a strike.
I think
and
that's...
nobody'd even, because it looked so inside, but get right on the inside of the strike zone. It was pretty awesome.
I think that helps combat the sign stealing. You know, it kind of throws them off a little bit, and you know, it's just one of the ways they're trying to work around that. With the bullpen thing, though, and it's obviously, as you guys have pointed out now in the opening segment, that it's like night and day. In September, it was nothing but implosion after implosion, and every day there was a different guy that we didn't think would make the roster, Kelly included, and then Hembree, of course, didn't, but then was added, and I mean... We haven't seen him since, I think, the Yankee series. And I think one of the things that is helping, though, is this new roving concept. I think all these guys, Kelly, Brazier, Kimbrel is performing better because I think he may have very well been tipping his pitches, but they're all a little bit more relaxed. And I think having Porcello and Eovaldi out in the bullpen kind of hanging out with these guys and these guys knowing that those guys are going to come in for at least an inning just kind of has a bit of a calming effect and has allowed them to kind of lock in, and every single one of them has stepped up. I was looking at the box scores. I don't think the bullpen at all has given up a single run so far in the first two games, and if I remember right, the only reliever who gave up a run at all in the Yankee series was Craig Kimbrel. So it's just been really impressive to watch, and you know, it started a few years ago with Francona, you know, going to Miller and getting all the way to Game 7 of the World Series with a three-man rotation, and that was kind of the catalyst, and it's kind of evolved since then. And now, you know, like you said, Jeremy, Alex Cora is basically making his own, you know, imprints on how to manipulate a bullpen throughout a series. So, really impressive.
Well, Terry, you know how much I love to disagree with you.
Yeah, you agree with everything I say.
It honestly like makes my day when I can just completely disagree with you and we can get into it. I can't disagree with anything you say there. Partially because it feels like at some points you were agreeing with me. So this is odd. We're off to an odd start, Liz. I don't know if it's your presence or what, but this is awkward. I would like to get into something Liz said. Because one thing Terry and I have disagreed with at one point relatively aggressively is the catcher position. Liz, I completely agree with you. I think Vasquez is by far and away the better option behind the plate. He had another hit tonight to right field. I don't have the box score immediately in front of me, which I should probably have, but I think he also drew a walk or maybe a second hit.
Mm-hmm.
I think outside of Sales, Binky, Leon, and that whole, like, I have to have Leon or I'm not comfortable nonsense, which, again, Terry is probably rolling his eyes so hard he may have passed out by now. But I think Vasquez is just by far and away the better option for this ball club. I do like how active he is behind the plate, and to agree with Terry, unfortunately, it is obviously to combat either real or perceived the concern that there are signs being stolen in this series. You're going to see the glove tapping the dirt, but the fastball above the belt. You're going to see the sign and then the crouch come up, but then the pitch be in the dirt, and you're going to see a lot of that. I've always thought Vasquez is a little bit more active in that kind of sense. I do think he has, you know, better feet, and he's obviously the better option offensively. With all that said, I don't think the catcher position really is going to have a big role in this. I thought it may have had a bigger role in past series. At this point, like, I'll be damned with all the you know, position by position analysis. Again, I just kind of harken back to the fact that it just feels like the Red Sox are just better across the board. And even factoring the fact that it just feels like their year, even though they may be weaker in some spots other than others, but it just seems like every time you worry about the bullpen performs. You every time you think, oh, they're just not hitting, they hit. You know, they're having problems with the starting pitching. David Price now reverts back to an ace. He's pitching. I mean, who would have predicted this three starts ago? This is just crazy. And now they go back to LA and they haven't lost on the road in the playoffs. So, like, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not necessarily concerned that they can't take two or three in LA. And I think the offense may actually heat up out there in the warm weather. I mean, this is crazy. It almost feels, and this could come back to bite me in the ass, this comment, if it goes the wrong way. It almost feels too, it shouldn't be this easy.
Go ahead,
yeah,
Liz.
Yeah, that's a strong comment. No, I was just going to say, that's a strong comment. But I want to touch back on the catcher situation. I mean, like I said, I haven't been paying, you know, that close attention, not near as close attention as you guys have, you know, over the extended period of time that you have been as, you know, fans of the team itself, obviously. So I look forward to doing that more next year. But I mean, I feel like the catcher is really important. And as much as I know no one likes, you know, a pitcher to favor one catcher over the other, if the pitcher doesn't trust the catcher's decision-making, you don't want to see a pitcher up on the mound shaking off everything that a catcher suggests. You know, if there's no trust in, you know, in that, then it's really rough, you know, for them. And I'll never forget, I don't even know what happened to Mark Burley, but I remember hearing Mark Burley when he was, like, at his peak, like, with the Blue Jays at some point. And Deanna Navarro, X-Ray, was his catcher. And he's like, hey, you know, I send him to the meetings. I don't go to the meetings. You know, he listens to everything. He tells me what to pitch. I put it where it needs to be. That's where it is. And so even though offensively, I mean, the catcher is notoriously, aside from the pitcher in the National League, you know, the worst hitter, you know, a lot of times in a lineup, I feel like that trust is important. And if a pitcher feels like they trust one catcher over another for whatever that reason is, then so be it. It's like when Price was with the Rays, the main catcher that we had, and he was horrible. Like, he hit under 100, or, you know, every single year, was Jose Molina. He was the worst, but he called a good game, and I really feel like he helped develop a lot of pitchers, even though he did nothing for us offensively. You know, everything he did for the pitching staff and everything made up for that. But I mean, there's merit in a pitcher, you know, feeling that way about every, you know, catcher on the staff. But I don't know. I don't know how you change that. But I feel like, you know, if a pitcher is going to do better with one versus the other, then the team needs to go with that as much as possible, as much as they can.
I'm basically at the point where, I mean, I'm fine with Vasquez in there. I mean, he had the base hit to, you know, spark that three-run inning, which ultimately won us the game. But I'm still, as far as a game caller situation, I'm always going to like Leon more. And I they're going to have a bit of a conundrum in the offseason where, what do they do? I mean, we can't carry three catchers forever. I mean, Blake Swihart is an everyday player on most rosters, even if it's not as a catcher. So I hate to see him waste away. And the one thing that would make me nervous is if they did get rid of Leon, really, from, you know, if they DFA'd him or whatever, because I do think he makes Vasquez better. Vasquez has always lost his job because of, you know, he just wasn't performing. You know, he was terrible at the plate, I think, at the start of last year. Leon got a lot of catching time, and I think Leon was basically Sale and Porcello's starting catcher this year. Vasquez wasn't lining up well with David Price, so they had Leon catch him for a while. Price had this epic turnaround, and I would just feel a lot better if both catchers were retained, even if Vasquez took the bulk of the starting time, because I just feel like he just goes into these Vasquez goes into these slumps and just doesn't, you know, things just don't go well, whether it's game calling or his offense or whatever. And then they go to the next option, which has always been Leon. So I expect Vasquez to probably, unless we get to game five and Sale starts another one, I would imagine that would probably be the only game Leon does start. And Vasquez, by far, even with Leon getting two hits the other night, or last night rather, Vasquez obviously the much better offensive option. So that's what I kind of, you know, envisioned going forward. And hopefully they find a role for Swihart. That way, Leon can at least be the backup, you know, and catch two out of every five, one out of every five. And, maybe Swihart is more of a utility type player.
Yeah, the points, just quickly, and then let's move on from the catcher situation. The point's not lost on me that he's had the arm injury, where he actually missed a full season, and then this year with the hand injury, where he has actually not only slumped, but he's been out of the lineup because of injury issues. So I don't have a problem with Leon, and I think I've made that pretty clear. I just feel like Vasquez is the better option, and I've come out pretty strong about the whole, like, personal catcher situation. For me, it just sets up a failure or an excuse for a pitcher who doesn't have that particular catcher available to him, whether it's because of, you know, slump, injury, there's no longer a fit on the roster or whatever. It just seems like it builds in an excuse. But look, I mean, I think we all agree that Vasquez has been really, really good. The hit and the run tonight. There's been a bunch of situations that we have talked about that have kind of come to a head here. Liz, I don't know how much you've listened to the podcast in the last like 10 days or so, but we've both felt pretty strongly, as I think most of Red Sox Nation does, that Raffy Devers really has to be the starting third baseman. And he has been. And he didn't get a hit tonight, but he's making the plays. He's not hurting anyone defensively. He had a couple last night. And then obviously it creates the flexibility where Nunez comes off the bench yesterday and hits the 3-run home run to put the game away. Another situation where we've gone back and forth on is the Ian Kinsler second base versus Brock Holt. I'm surprised we haven't seen Holt yet. Kinsler obviously with the hit to score the first run and give us that all-important, first run where we're like 73-12 when that happens. So that's been interesting. But I think it also goes forward just to highlight that Cora's been, we can criticize him, we can question him, but at the end of all these games, it's crazy how it just seems like he's always right.
He is.
That's why.
I mean, I rolled my eyes last night when Nunez came off because Devers was having such a great game. I'm like, geez, why the hell would you pull him out? And then, bam, 3-run shot, kind of like Victorino, in 2013. And he was right about that. And, I mean, Jeremy and I were talking before we come on, and I think JD right now is the front runner for MVP, but that could change over the next two or three games. Obviously, Benintendi, obviously good candidate, was 4 out of 5 last night. I don't have his stuff up in front of me here, but he definitely had a good game defensively tonight, though. With that one catch out by the monster. But he was 0-for-3 tonight with a walk, though, Benintendi. But the guys you expected to have the big impacts this whole postseason outside of JD really haven't. Mookie's been good in less impactful ways. He's gotten on base. He scored some runs. Benintendi the same way. But Nunez last night, JD tonight, Bradley a couple of times in the series before. It's just everybody is stepping up. Who hasn't stepped up so far and made a huge... Kinsler drove in the first run tonight.
Are you talking about the playoffs generally or the World Series?
Generally the playoffs. Like, it's just been a different hero every night, it seems like. And it's not usually... It's usually a guy that Cora, a decision he makes, which often gets overlooked, and it comes up big, I guess, was the point I was making.
I mean, it's a good point. You know, Betts has had his moments. Benintendi, obviously. Pierce has had to step into an increased role because of the Moreland injury, but then Moreland pinch hits, and that Astros series before he started game five, he was 1-1 or 1-for-1 with two walks and an RBI. JD's had his moments, including the big three-run home run against the Yankees to get the whole thing started. Bogey's not been great, but he had the home run in the Yankee series. Devers obviously at the home run against the Astros to put it away. Kinsler tonight chips in despite where he's been absolutely atrocious in certain situations. Bradley Jr. was the ALCS MVP, and then you get all the way to the catcher position. And Leon has not contributed offensively even a little bit except for a sack bunt, which, you know, kind of comically drove Hap from that start. Vasquez, on the other hand, has been a plus offensively. He's had a number of hits. And you're right. I mean, it's absolutely amazing how it feels like not all at once, but at various times, the whole lineup has contributed, and there really hasn't been a position where, you know, where we've said, you know, there's an automatic out. And one of the things we highlighted before this, in our playoff preview was, we expressed grave concerns over the bottom half of the lineup's ability to produce almost anything. Not only necessarily producing, but just flipping it over to Mookie with people on base, and they've done that. They've Kinsler 7, Bradley 8, and Vasquez 9. Everyone had a hit. Everyone was 1-for-3. So, I mean, you can say what you want, but... again, this team has just seemingly found a way all across the board. It's been a different way almost every game, but, you know, they found a way. And it again, I know Liz says I've come out pretty strong with this, but it feels like it's their year.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, you go ahead, Liz.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, I just can't, I really keep thinking back to how I felt at the beginning of the playoffs and that everything was just going to fall apart, like, that this epic season that the Sox had, you know, was all going to be for naught, you know, and they were going to get, beat, you know, I thought they were going to get beat by the Yankees, and then I'm like, well, there goes that, and then, of course, they come in, you know, beat the Astros, beat the world champs, and then come in, and then they're doing what they're doing to the Dodgers, and it's definitely going to be like an epic end. I think they're going to come into LA, and just like you were saying, you know, with the warm weather. They were saying, I forget even who it was, but they were saying definitely the home field advantage for them, you know, not only being used to that type of atmosphere and the way the fans are and everything, which surprisingly, I could hear Dodger fans chanting. I couldn't believe there was enough Dodger fans in Boston, you know, to actually hear them, you know, above the Red Sox fans. But just the weather, you know, the Dodgers aren't used to playing in that cold, and, you know, just that little bit of difference can make a difference. And then, of course, coming into warmer weather, you can only play well. So I think they're going to come in there and probably win it over there. I don't think there's really any question of that. I don't think they'll be back in Boston. But how would you guys feel about Price coming in out of the bullpen, speaking of the roving bullpen situation? Do you think that would be something Cora would do, you know, if it came down to it, and, you know, if it would look like he's not going to make another start? Or
it could happen in game 4 or 5, but the one thing that I keep telling myself is, you know, this Dodgers team, they're a bigger home run threat than the Astros were, but they're not as good of a contact hitting team. And I look back to that Brewers series, and Miley had that 5 innings where he shut him down. Chacin did it at least once, just completely shut them down. And obviously Sale and Price are, you know, are aces and much better pitchers than those two. But when I do look at Miley and Chassin, I'm like, even Evaldi and Porcello could conceivably, you know, string together a strong 5-6, and if we're really lucky, 7 innings. So I think there's a good chance we win 2 out of 3 out in L.A.
Yeah, I agree. Liz, I 100% think that we'll see Price in relief for a couple of reasons. One, you know, Cora finally, after using the role in the first two series, came out and gave it a name. It made it tangible. It made it something that the media finally kind of put some importance on. And then not only that, like, he had Price up in the ALCS in two separate games. And he was really hot and ready to go. And I think it was game 4. That wasn't faking it. Like, he had plans to bring Cora had plans to bring Price in there. So, my answer to your question, which I think is a pretty good question and a pretty good topic, is absolutely 100%. I think we see Price, especially if it's a closeout game. I think they're going to rather see Price than anyone outside of Brazier, Barnes, Kelly, and Kimbrel. So if you feel like, you know, let's say they have a lead and Porcello can only go, or Evaldi can only go 4, I wouldn't be surprised to see Price either in the 5th or the 8th to bridge the gap one way or the other to Kimbrel or the guys he trusts. So good question, and the answer to me clearly is yes. So, you know, but at the same time, I will say I'm kind of shocked that we're not commenting a little bit more about the turnaround with Price. I mentioned it in my open, or actually not quite in my open, but I think it was my second comment. It's one of those things where it seems like Red Sox Nation is going to forget about the struggles really quickly because all of a sudden he's been dominant. I listened to some of his comments, and for the first time, he said, tonight, right on the field, he said to the female anchor, she asked, what has changed the most? And the answer shocked the living shit out of me. The answer was me. He took accountability for the first time, at least in his tenure as a Red Sox. And Liz, obviously, he grew up in the Rays organization, so you probably know him better than us. But I honestly wanted to, like, stand up and in my room by myself, like, clap, like, holy shit. He gets it. He figured it out. It's like in Top Gun when Maverick finally figures out that he has the talent to do it. It's like, oh, my God, he fucking gets it. And, you know, the crazy thing moving forward is if this is truly behind him, all of a sudden, and I can't believe I'm saying this, and it's only 2 starts, so I'm going to say it with some reserve. But if he's going to be this version of David Price in the playoffs, all of a sudden that contract doesn't look like such a piece of shit. Like, I think we're about to win a World Series, knock on wood, with David Price as a contributing factor. He's embracing the fact that it was him. He has turned the narrative on its head and pitched not only, like, good or average, but great. And all of a sudden, like, you know, and I'm interested to see what Terry says here, but all of a sudden, like, David Price gives Red Sox Nation hope. Like, I almost am like, please don't opt out. And 2 weeks ago, like, I think my quote was, I would start the GoFundMe page if someone would agree to take half of his salary. So all of a sudden, I'm like, whoa, let me backtrack off that and say, and look, if we're going to get this iteration of David Price in the playoffs, this guy's could be, not only because it's already happening now, but I'm talking in the future. Like, this is a guy we want in the Red Sox.
Yeah, and I don't want to open up a can of worms, but there is no pitcher on the free agent market this offseason like David Price. So I feel like a slight majority of me still believes he's not going to opt out, but it is increasing, you know, with each start and each win. And so
I don't think he's going to opt out. Well, you know what's increasing? My desire that he doesn't.
No, I get that.
2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I mean, I'm not kidding you. I would have rickshawed David Price to Logan Airport from my home in Boca Raton. I'm not kidding you. Liz, I'm not even joking. Like, obviously, that's hyperbole to some extent. But if someone was like, he doesn't have to be a Red Sox for the next 4 years, but you have to rickshaw David Price to Logan Airport from your home in Boca Raton, I'd be like, can someone just make sure the rickshaw is going to make it all, like, 1,700 miles? Like, I would have done it.
He's not.
But now I'm like, now my mindset is, well, hold on a minute. He was really good, 2.25 ERA in the second half after the All-Star break. And he's flipped the narrative on the whole playoff thing. I mean, to the extent where he's been better than Sale, maybe better than everyone not named Nathan Eovaldi out of that rotation. It's an astonishing turnaround given how bad he was as a career playoff performer.
He's not kidding though, yeah. Liz. Before the Yankee series, he was drinking the punch hard, and I'm pretty sure it had vodka in it. And then he gives up that dud start, comes out after an inning and two-thirds, and then Jeremy's like barfing up the punch on the next podcast.
Well, first of all, I got sick off vodka as a senior in high school at Mercy Warren's house, and I haven't drank it since, so that's not possible.
It is gross.
But that said, Liz, so credit to me for being honest with myself here. Yeah. I was optimistic. I wasn't drinking the Kool-Aid. I was optimistic because Sale won that first game of the ALDS, and in my mindset, the pressure was off of David Price, and I felt like he was put in a position where he could not necessarily worry about the result, just worry about the process, and he came out and laid an absolute fucking egg. And I was so pissed, because I'm not by any means, even before that point, like a David Price lover. Like, I was at least at the very minimum, I was like neutral on David Price, definitely leaning towards, like, this guy just sucks in the big moments. And I bought into that start. And it was a Saturday night, and admittedly, I may have had a couple of cocktails or two. And I was just so upset that I bought into it that I eviscerated him for 58 minutes. Eviscerated. I've listened to the podcast. I encourage anyone to go back, because we all were kind of comically upset. No one worse than me, obviously. But, I mean, look, it highlights the fact that despite how bad that start was, and despite the fact that the narrative was typically for him to turtle in those moments, and then not only turtle but just to continue rolling downhill, he stood up and he delivered in really big moments. And he is a very big part of the we're two wins away, and he's a huge part of it.
Go ahead,
yeah,
Liz.
I mean, it seems like he finally got out of his own way, like, somehow, and it'd be really interesting to know exactly how that happened. And what he did, you know, between that, the start with the Yankees and then the big one he had with the Astros, like what exactly went down with David Price. And, I mean, I'd like to think it was just some kind of cathartic thing where maybe he, like, meditated and just realized that he can just go out there and do the Ty Cobb thing and just be the ball and just, you know, shut everything out and everything's cool, and, you know, him be the David Price I feel like he can be, but maybe it's something else. It'll be interesting if something comes out, you know, later, you know, to see how he was able to pull it together the way that he was. But what I want to know is if Terry's going to hold up his end of the bargain and not say anything negative next year.
I was literally just looking at that tweet right now.
I'd like to chime in here and be a spoiler.
I said this morning
Terry will be negative next year.
Well, no. Hang on, I'm fine. I can do whatever I want next year. What the tweet said was, I'm trying to pull it up now. I thought I retweeted it. Oh, here it goes. I said, just to prove that I'm a reasonable man, if Price records a win tonight, which I strategically said, because the Red Sox could have won even without Price getting a win, and that would void the whole deal. But if Price records a win tonight, I will not post a single negative tweet about him until next season, and I put tweet in all caps.
So that
reserves the right for me to bash him as much as I want to on here. Not saying I'm going to, but
also the minute the season starts next year, he can open up the floodgates again.
Oh, exactly.
So I carefully crafted, and I'm kind of a little bit impressed, actually, by the way that was crafted, if you're assuming you're reading it accurately here.
Yeah, I was. I was real careful about everything. But that being said, because everybody, you know, comes to my account to see if I'm going to bash him or not. You know, usually the price huggers do. And I'm done with it, you know. And the reason why I said that today is because I felt like if we were going to win tonight, we're probably going to win the series. I mean, he could start game six and get knocked around a little bit, and we could still win the World Series anyway. So I'm not gonna bash him for the sake of doing it anyway, regardless of what I have said throughout the course of the day. He's pitched well. He's been basically the best starter, other than, as Jeremy said, outside of Eovaldi. And you know, I mean, we wouldn't be where we are right now without those performances. So I'll give him that much credit. I'm never going to be a David Price guy. If he opts out, I will probably celebrate. I'll never wear his jersey unless I lose a bet. And that's just where I am. I'm just never going to be a Price guy.
I'm surprised the jersey thing I don't care about, because, frankly, I only buy jerseys of historically great players. So, like, David Ortiz and some of the other, like, you know, quote-unquote lifers. But I'm surprised you're still standing firm on you're never going to be a Price guy, because he has been I'm just generally not as negative or pessimistic as you, Terry. But I'm definitely, I have not historically been a Price guy. And I think you know that. And I'm not going to become a Price guy. But I'm also, it's going to be hard for me to kind of continue the anti-Price narrative, because he's been as good as he's been. I mean, you know, I've got to come, I think admittedly, and Terry, maybe you disagree with this, or I think you do disagree with this based on your comment, I have to come back towards the middle here. You know, the Homer Simpson meme where he kind of disappears into the bush, like two dominant starts. I thought he was really, really good. And tonight was a real big test, because one of the things Terry and I talked about three podcasts ago was, if he gives up two earned runs, can he come back from it? And we both resoundingly said, not a fucking chance in hell. And guess what? Tonight he did it. And not only did he get out of the inning, then he pitched two more really, really solid, quick innings, and left Cora in a position where he could use the guys he really wanted to use. You know, one of the things I would like to note is he went Kelly, Eovaldi, Kimbrel, did not pitch Brazier, did not pitch Barnes tonight. Surprising. You know, well, really surprised.
And no, actually, there is a reason for that. Dave Roberts has started mostly, I think for the second night in a row, he started an all right-handed lineup until the lefty starter came out. And then he puts in his power lefties, Bellinger, Max Muncy. And that kind of screws with Brazier, Barnes, and not so much Kelly, as we found out. But I think he just preferred Eovaldi in that spot. And Kelly obviously dominant, and it doesn't seem to matter so much with Kimbrel, but the other guys can't for some reason throw their off-speed stuff against the lefties as good, as we have found out. And when Liz, you brought up whether or not we'll see David Price or not as a reliever, you'll probably see him for that exact reason. If Roberts is going to sit his lefties again, especially in game five, assuming Sale starts that's exactly what Cora is going to do to counteract that. So
the splits are better with Kelly over Brazier and Barnes. And like, I have no issue with Eovaldi, because We've talked about this. He's an elite strike thrower, and I just honestly get the it makes me smile when a reliever comes in and you know he's going to throw strikes, and Eovaldi is that guy. So I don't have any issue with Eovaldi. Zero. And I love this whole Rover thing. I think it just shows how progressive Cora is. But I'm just surprised with Kelly because he's been basically a total piece of shit all year. He has not been a strike thrower. In fact, he's probably been like a complete negative, like D-minus strike thrower. So and Brazier and Barnes had been so good and had been used so reliably all playoffs. I just, you know, I was surprised that they kind of changed that whole situation. If you were going to go Eovaldi in the eighth, which I, again, don't have a problem with, I'm just surprised it wasn't Brazier or Barnes over Kelly in the seventh.
Yeah.
Are you guys concerned at all about them using Eovaldi in both games and then, you know, him? I mean, I know it was just one inning each game, so, I mean, that's not a lot of work or anything like that, but as far as him coming in and being a starter in game four, is that any, you have any concern about that? Or
I'm not at all, because, I mean, I think he could start game three, really. I mean, we have an off day. I think he pitched 15, 16 pitches last night. Tonight must have been similar or maybe even less. I don't think
13.
So I don't think that's really going to bother him that much because they usually throw a side session anyway. I think 2 days before their start. So I kind of like Porcello anyway, you know, against a lineup like this, that's like an all or nothing type lineup. And I'm sure Eovaldi, you know, if Porcello gets the win tomorrow, I think Eovaldi is going to have an excellent shot anyway to clinch it, like Lackey did 5 years ago. And I'm also wondering how much tenacity is this Dodgers lineup going to have if they do go down 3-0, because the Astros definitely didn't. Like, the only guy who showed up for that game was Verlander, you know, in the Astros series. So
Liz, I'm not sure if you're trying to take Terry's position as the host of the podcast, because this is another really good question.
Oh, no.
And you know how much I love to disagree and hate on Terry. So I'm all in on Liz as the host. Great question, in my opinion. And I think the answer is twofold. One, again, Eovaldi's an elite strike thrower. Like, no one can doubt that. And he showed it not only as a starter, but in his relief appearances this postseason. Tonight, 13 pitches, 9 strikes. He is an elite strike thrower. And what's crazy is he's an elite strike thrower with an absolute plus-plus fastball that, again, hit 100 miles per hour tonight. I think the situation with Eovaldi is he's only going to be expected to pitch game four, and maybe they're not going to ask for 6 or 7 innings. Maybe they'll only ask for 4 because of the desire to throw him in relief, which I don't have a problem with, because then that maybe leaves him available. He won't pitch game three, and he may not pitch game five, but he's going to be available in game six and game seven out of the bullpen. And with his ability to come in and throw strikes, I think that just makes this thing completely he becomes so versatile in that role. And I actually disagreed with that coming into the preview, and I'm going to go ahead and acknowledge I'm wrong, so credit to me for doing that. because I actually had Eovaldi in game three and Porcello in game seven, and Terry had it the other way. And again, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I think Terry had it right. Just because Eovaldi is, Porcello won. I think to some extent, Cora trusts Porcello a little bit more, even though maybe I don't. But Eovaldi has shown that he is lights out, absolute lights out in that role. So you're never gonna see a second start out of Eovaldi, and so maybe they don't mind giving him 3 or 4 relief appearances.
And, I mean, Cora is just such a high baseball IQ guy. There might be some type of analytics that suggests that Eovaldi's the better reliever out of the pen for whatever reason. I fully expected Porcello to make an appearance as a Rover in the first two games, and it hasn't happened. And maybe Eovaldi was going to start game three. Who knows? And it just, because of his, the way they've leaned on him out of the pen, maybe that's why he's starting game four, but it's a good problem to have. It's a good problem to have. They're both quality guys. Both, I think they're going to be, I think they just pitch really well to this type of a lineup. So I'm really comfortable right now, you know, going into LA. And we haven't lost a road game, by the way.
Yeah, and I just looked again, and I think I've touched on it. The there's zero selfishness on this roster. Literally every single starter has been up or in a game, you know, in a bullpen situation, in a reliever setting. Price hasn't come into a game, but he's been up, and he was clearly prepared to do that. And Liz, just quickly, he mentioned at the end of that Astros series that one of the reasons he attributes his success is that when he was warming up for game four, he felt like he found a tick in his windup and fixed it while he was getting hot. And he reiterated that today on the field in that post-game press conference or on-field commentary that I mentioned. But just getting back to the fact that this team just overall has been selfless. I've literally heard, now that I think about it just over the course of the year, I've heard almost zero discord with, you know, where someone's hitting, their number of at-bats. Even Swihart, who really, you know, was completely underutilized, in my opinion, and really just ate up a roster spot just because they wanted to keep him. He never even said anything except for a little blip back in, I think, early May about his role. And that came from his agent. And then he came out, like, immediately that day and said, that was my agent's comment. I don't feel that way. This team has been selfless, and it's just shown through in this playoff series. This rotation has just exhibited that more than anything. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And these are all guys, by the way, these are all multi-million-dollar, $10 to $15 million per year assets. And the fact that they're willing to go out there and lay it all out on the line. And by the way, Evaldi is an unrestricted free agent.
Yep.
These guys, this is the selflessness is just not lost on me. And no offense, if I'm Evaldi, I'm like, I'll pitch every 5 days and you can just go screw yourself otherwise, because I've had two Tommy John surgeries and I want to go get paid. And what has he done? The exact fucking opposite. And I'll tell you right now, if Evaldi's in a bar that I'm in, he's never paying for another beer, because that guy has been so selfless, pitched with balls all series. I think he's just been absolutely fantastic, and it's a microcosm of the whole team all year long.
Well, and honestly, that's why it doesn't always work out for teams that just go out and buy a bunch of superstars, because you put a bunch of egotistical assholes, for lack of a better way, you know, to describe them, you know, together in a group, and everybody's just out for themselves, even if on paper, you know, and maybe that's part of, you know, what is happening to the Dodgers right now, which is a good thing, you know, for the Sox, obviously. But having Manny Machado, you know, in your locker room is a little bit, you know, that can sway things. You know, you've got somebody in there that is just out for himself, you know, where even though, like you said, the Red Sox are the most expensive team in baseball, you know, right now. So they definitely have a lot of money, you know, in there, but nobody's in there just to, like, for that next big contract. They just want to go out there and win, and they're willing to do, you know, whatever it takes to do it. You know, if they're a starter, you know, going in and pitching those bullpen sessions, doing whatever it takes. And I appreciate that about a team. And that's probably another reason why, like, I don't feel bad about supporting them, like, at all. Like, I won't apologize for that. You know, to anybody who thinks that, you know, because I say that, oh, you're a bandwagon person now or something like that. No, I can appreciate a team and not necessarily be a fan of them, but that's definitely something I like about them too, is nobody's out there, you know, letting their ego, you know, get in front of, you know, what's really important, and, you know, that's winning the pennant. So
you're going to have a Red Sox tattoo by next July, Liz.
Jesus. No. I lived in Boston for like 2 years, and I had to get back to my sunshine and palm trees, as I say. But it's funny, like, thank God my commute to work was not very long, but Boston radio is just atrocious, no offense. It is. I hadn't really found podcasts at that point, so that's my fault. And but I used to kind of love listening to Boston sports radio in a lot of ways, because the passion is just so strong. And a lot of people like hate on Terry because he's negative, but something I think I've always appreciated about him is that the passion is always there, but you're not afraid to be critical of the team that you love. You know, I feel like a lot of fans get caught up in this all like, oh, we're going all the way every single year, you know, kind of a thing. And then, you know, they can never see the faults in the players that they like. And, but Terry's not that way. And the way that the Boston radio is, it was always so funny to me, like that the Red Sox could win the World Series, you know, this year. And I bet you the very next day they'll be on there talking about, oh, what they did wrong and what they're going to do better next year to get more wins than the 108 or whatever it was that they ended up, you know, having. And some people may find that annoying, but I always appreciated that about the market and about the fans. So,
well, you know, Liz, I don't know anyone who could listen to this podcast and say that you're bandwagging for the Red Sox. I mean, you basically admitted to rooting against them all, completely along the way. And despite the fact that you, I think, suggested that you're rooting for the Red Sox, I think it was more of a hatred for L.A., which, you know, if you're not a Red Sox fan, we can agree on hatred for L.A., especially now that LeBron's out there. That just total spineless sack of shit. But look, to your point, this market is especially tough. I think Terry embodies that. I am not a tree hugger. I'm not like totally optimistic all the time. I think there's a certain level of success where you can't just be all Red Sox all the time, or no one will listen to you. And so you have to see it both ways, and you have to see it glass half empty, or it just becomes unlistenable, except for that small segment of Boston fans that are just so like obnoxiously positive. So I you know, the fact that you live in Boston, I think, has given you a really unique perspective. I frankly have really enjoyed listening to you so far tonight. And I think you've given a pretty unique perspective of the city. And obviously Terry is the way he is, and I don't have any problem with that. I'm somewhere in the middle though.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a lot more tamer on the podcast than I am my Twitter account, but you know, I just I like to look at it from as neutral of a position as I can, and if I'm concerned about something, I'm gonna mention it. And some people just can't handle that, and you know, and that's fine, but I mean, I'm not gonna budge, and I'm gonna be stubborn about something. And if I hate someone, I'm gonna be vocal about that too. And Jeremy, I mean, you've been with me for the most part with David Price. I mean, a lot of people are softening up after the night. I get that, and that's not a complaint by any means. That means we're about to win a World Series. But
I've been alongside you on David Price.
Yeah, and Dustin Pedroia, that's another core thing, you know, that so many Sox, you know, homers
I have not softened on the little leader.
The little leader, all. Right. Yeah. So,
oh my God. Don't get me started on that guy, Terry. Please.
So I think we agree on some really key core things here, you know, that most Sox homers are gonna, you know, haul out the pitchforks about, but yeah, and that's why I think our podcast has an edge on so many others, is because they're all the same. They're all homers. They can only look at things one way, and it's just a one-dimensional view of Boston sports. And we're gonna be multi-dimensional, and you know, and we're not always gonna be right, but we're gonna, you know, at least give people different looks at things. And
so in that theme, just before we end tonight, Terry, moving forward, so Game 3 is going to be Ricky
Friday night,
Porcello versus Bueller. I have some concern, cuz Bueller is the type that he has absolutely electric stuff. We've talked about it, and I think he can shut down a lineup. I don't think this lineup can be shut down. I think even if Buehler's at his best, he's five or six innings, a quality start, giving up three runs. And for that reason, I just honestly think this team is capable of easily sweeping the series. They just beat Kershaw and Ryu. And I think Ryu is generally, I mean, this may not be a popular opinion, but I think he's kind of an average lefty. I know he's had like a sub-2 ERA in the second half of the season, but his stuff just to me doesn't seem to be an electric. Like, Buehler is electric. You're going to see I just think this offense is overpowering. And then with Rich Hill's 37 years old, which is, I'm calling him old. He's like basically my age. I would be absolutely shocked if this team's performed the way it's performed with the 108 wins, the postseason performances, for him to, with his 88 mile per hour fastball, and he obviously is best with his off speed stuff. I'd just be shocked if these guys shut down this team in those starts. And I'm not going to say the Dodgers aren't going to win a game, because actually I do think they're going to win one of the next two games. But it just seems to me like this team, to beat this Boston Red Sox team, you're going to have to score seven runs. And I don't know if anybody can do that. I don't know if the Dodgers can do that. But it seems like it's that type of situation where even like tonight, they only got four runs. But, the Dodgers didn't just do enough offensively, and I feel like that's going to be a real big problem moving forward. So that's how I see the rest of the series going. I do think this game's going to go five or six. I picked the Red Sox in six. I may have to backtrack off that a little bit because I thought they would split in Boston, but I do think the series goes at least five.
Go ahead, Liz.
I was just going to say I mean, you already told me, or you already said, since you think it's going to be in six, what do you think the likelihood of them possibly going in and sweeping? Because I really think you're right. I don't think at this point, as long as, barring any, I don't even know what I think could change right now to slow these guys down. Because they're really, like we've been saying, like all night, just showing up in big spots. Be it the bats showing up or be it, the bullpen just holding it together. Is there a likelihood that they could go in and win in four?
I think so.
What's your honest feeling, like knowing the team both the way that both of you do? Because I certainly don't know them the way that you do. And you seeing them from the regular season to now and how they're performing. And, I mean, Buehler, I've watched a little bit, I saw him. And, I mean, he is awesome. And he's not a rookie, but he might as well be. And I know he's pitched in a lot of big situations. But I don't know. I think it's strange. With interleague play, you can just never tell. Like how it's going to be. Like he could come in and take the lineup by surprise. And with any other team, I might think that's true, but I think that's going to work to an advantage that they've never seen him before. He'll go through the lineup. It'll look like, oh, he's skating through. It'll be great. But then that second time through, they're going to hit him just like they did tonight.
Liz, I'm going to defer to Terry, but I'd like to just make my first point, which is, yes, I think you should host the show.
No, absolutely should not. No,
so if you're trying to take Terry's job, I think maybe you should slow down because...
I'm asking these questions because I honestly don't know. Like, I actually can't wait for next year when I can kind of... won't be a clean slate, but I can start from spring training and actually, like, watch all the way through and have something to build on, because a lot of times I just feel like, oh my god, like these guys have been watching this team for so long and they know so much, and like I'm just going off of what I had seen up until this, up until I started paying more attention. So I appreciate that, but I could never
politically correct. Politically correct response, great leading question. Yes, Liz, I've already said I think you should be the host of this podcast. Terry, go ahead. You bat lead off here. I'll piggyback off of what you have to say here.
I think the Sox can absolutely sweep. I just feel like the lineup is just really pesky, and they haven't seen much of Buehler, but he hasn't really pitched to them either. So I just feel like I have a lot of confidence in Rick Porcello being able to shut down this lineup for 5-6. He might even go 7 innings. I would not be shocked. And I think Eovaldi could probably do the same thing. And at that point, I mean, if you get 6 or 7 innings out of these guys, Cora just has a ton of weapons at his disposal, you know, and from Kelly, Brazier, any type of roving starter. You won't see Chris Sale do it, I don't think, but these guys are just, I think these guys can do it. I just don't think the Dodgers are built very well to beat the Red Sox. They had all they could do to beat the Brewers, and they had no rotation whatsoever. And Atlanta, I mean, that was the biggest cupcake series of the whole playoffs. That was the weakest team that was basically just the product of a bad division, and the Dodgers were fortunate enough that they were able to play them. And I think a sweep is, and we're undefeated on the road. You know, playing on the road is not a problem for this team. So I think a sweep is entirely possible, but I do think there's very little chance that we're going to see another game at Fenway. I really would be surprised if there is a game 6. I'll say that.
No, the only bad thing about that, and I'll have so much anxiety because I won't be able to watch on Saturday. If they win on Friday, I'm actually, my anniversary is Saturday, and I'll be in Lexington, Kentucky at a concert at that time. So I'm going to do what I can to at least, you know, watch the score. So I'll be keeping my fingers crossed for them, because a sweep would be epic. Like, what a way to end, like, a historic season, you know, for them. And you know, just the way everybody, you know, on the team's being, you know, pulling together and having that, you know, no ego, you know, type way of playing, you know, it would be amazing, you know, to see that, but I would just be really sad if I couldn't witness the win. All I can hope is that the game goes late, and then I'll be either at a bar or back in my hotel by the time it's over, and I'll be able to see them spraying the champagne if they do take that win Friday. But
Terry, that sounds like a Boston Red Sox fan. I don't
want to say that.
It's not my nature to say things like that, but I think I have to say that. Liz, obviously I joke. back to your excellent leadoff question, like the type of question that a host would ask. I don't think a sweep will happen, but let me just give a little caveat. I have tickets to game 6. Which has put me in quite the little predicament here, because obviously I would love to go to a World Series game at Fenway Park. I would never trade a game at World Series, game 6 at Fenway in the World Series for the risk of not winning the World Series. So let me make that very clear. Like, I'd rather them sweep and guarantee that we're going to win the ship versus like going to a game that we may ultimately lose, and like that. So my allegiances are totally towards the championship and less towards the personal experience. Now, with that said, this Dodgers team is way too talented to get swept. I'm not saying that 5 games is out of the question, and I'm not saying that a sweep is out of the question. I just don't think they will, because I think they're going to go into Dodger Stadium, and in one of the next 2 games, they're going to hit 3 or 4 home runs. Because that's what they do. That's how they're built to win. And I think they're going to win 1 game. Now, whether they can do it a second time to get to Fenway and give me a chance to go to Fenway Park to see them potentially win in Fenway Park, you know, I don't know. I don't think so, because I don't think they're going to stop this offense, this Red Sox offense. And I don't think they're going to do what – if they do hit home runs, I don't think it's going to be done consistently enough where they're going to outperform the Boston Red Sox lineup. But this team is too – let's not get hung up in the fact that they only won, quote-unquote, 92 games. This team can launch. Like, they're built to hit home runs. one through nine or eight, I guess, in the National League Park. I also think there's a situation here where there's going to be a lineup change that's going to make a lot of Red Sox fans uncomfortable, whether it's Betts at second so JD can play right, or Benintendi in center so that JD can play left. I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen. I think it's going to depend in the Buehler start. I think you're going to see Betts at second, and in that Rich Hill start, I think you're actually going to see JD in left where Bradley sits. But again, let's not lose sight of the fact that all of it, this isn't, you know, American League versus American League. All of a sudden, we're going to have to switch, and we're going to have to play a National League brand of baseball. And I don't think it's so crippling, like, oh my God, we're not going to be able to win a game in Dodger Stadium. I don't think that's what's going to happen. But let's not lose sight of the fact that all of a sudden we do have to adapt. We're going to take a bat out of the lineup we want in the lineup, and we're going to have to put a pitcher in the lineup where we just haven't had to typically do that because we're an American League team. I think it's a factor. I just don't see a sweep happening for those two reasons. And then I don't think I'm being selfish because I don't have to go to game six if it means that there's any jeopardy of not winning the championship. But if the Dodgers are able to win two, and I don't think they're going to win all three. Let's not think that's going to happen. But if we go back to Boston up 3-2 and I just so happen to see them win at Fenway Park, I wouldn't hate that either.
I don't think they like spilling alcohol in their own clubhouse. All their stuff's in there. I think they just like doing it, you know, on the road. Let me say one thing, though, to piggyback off of that. I don't usually piggyback. It's just not my thing. But just kidding.
Well, I know how much you love to agree with me, Terry. Go ahead. Well, please agree with me.
Well, not so much necessarily agreeing, actually. But I don't think Mookie Betts is going to play second base, at least tomorrow. We're up 2-0. I don't think Bradley is real critical in the lineup, even though we're finally facing a righty. I just think Mookie's going to stay out there. JD's been, like I said, the top, you know, run producer. He'll be in left, Benny in center, and I would expect that for tomorrow at the very least. And
I want to make it very clear that this pains me to say this. I agree with Terry. I think that's the way you've dealt with it all year. Whether it's you just want to have, you know, you want to give somebody in the outfield a break, it's always been Benintendi in center. I'm not so adverse to Betts at second base, but it just seems to me like if you want to continue to stay the course and play the way you've played for 162 plus 12 games or whatever it is, that's so clearly the option. And let's not lose sight of the fact, Terry, you and I have talked about this. Bradley had 3 hits in the ALCS, and they happened to all come with 2 outs, and they produced 9 runs. But he had no other hits in that series. Right. He has had 1 hit in the World Series. He wasn't great in the Yankees series. He's great defensively. He doesn't provide, except for the anomaly in the ALCS, he doesn't provide any plus offensively. It just seems to me to so clearly be the choice to go that way. If they do decide to go Betts at second, I think it'll be for 4 or 5 innings max, and I think they'll then reverse course. I just don't want that to be JD coming out of the lineup, because you have to have him in the lineup in the run-producing situations late. It just seems to me like he's got to be in the lineup. I know you're going to give away a little bit defensively, but that's the way it has to be. So, Terry, pains me to say it, but I agree with you.
Okay. Boo.
I'm glad you said you give up a little bit defensively, because I was going to ask you, I mean, do you guys feel as if JD is going to be able to cover that ground in Dodger Stadium? That's a huge freaking stadium. Like, and I know each field is roughly the same, but it's interesting how the dimensions like pan out. And I mean, is he going to be able to cover the ground? I mean, will he be able to make, you know, those catches and save those runs and things? I mean, I don't know too much about him, admittedly, and I'm sorry about that. But I mean, why wouldn't they put him at first? I know unless he's only played outfield. Like, first seems like a logical place. You know, that's where they always seem to put Big Poppy, you know, whenever they needed him in the lineup. you know, in a National League game. You know, why wouldn't they just do that with JD?
Well, that sounds like a question a host would ask.
I'm trying to.
Terry, do you want first crack at this one?
Well, I just want to say, I mean, he never has played the infield to my knowledge, and he was an adequate outfielder for 3 or 4 years in Detroit, and my only concern is his ankle from that little tumble he took, but, I mean, he got around the bases fine tonight, and we're sacrificing a little bit of defense, but I'm fine with it.
Yeah, no, look, Liz, great question. It's the type of question a really good host would ask. He has said he hasn't played the infield. So, and I know you're a Rays fan, so, you know, just...
I didn't remember.
You may not know that, and that's absolutely 100% expected, and it's fine. But he's just not going to play the first base. Ortiz, by the way, was in the Twins organization by trade, a first baseman. So just a little context there. He is definitely 100% a downgrade defensively over any of the Benintendi, Bradley, Betts outfield. He is. There's no question. Is he so bad that he's like Manny Ramirez, where he could potentially lose you a game? No, he's not. Well, hold on, because that guy was
a piece of... For you guys, he was a toxic cancer to the Rays. He was horrible. It's the worst. Oh my god.
Gotcha. Love the haterade. Love it. I could drink that haterade all night. But just as a context for your question, he's not Manny. He's not going to dive and cut off a center fielder's throw. He's not going to drop a routine fly ball just because he's kind of like he's reaching in his pocket for sunflower seeds. He's not great. He's not going to make diving plays. He's not going to go steal a home run. But he's going to do enough in the first 7 innings where I don't think he's going to lose you a game. Whereas on the flip side, he could easily hit that 3 home run, that swing that produces 3 runs that actually wins you a game. So I don't expect him to be playing right field in the 9th inning of a 1-run game with Kimbrel on the mound. But I do expect him to play meaningful innings in the outfield and get 3 at-bats or 4 at-bats per game. And look, if they can get ahead 2, 3, 4 runs, and maybe even Kimbrel's not going to be in the game, I would expect him to play all 9 innings.
That sounds excellent to me.
Something else I just wanted to mention, too, is you were talking about the Dodgers being built to hit home runs and everything. Something that I have always thought, you know, home runs are great. Everybody likes to see them. I mean, they're a nice number. Any batter wants that slugging percentage and everything. But at the same time, home runs, most of the time, don't win games. And the way the Red Sox are playing, I mean, they're playing small ball baseball. They're getting people on base. They're getting them through the gap, you know, and the Dodgers just don't play well against that. Like, actually, what I hate to see happen with JD in the, and I don't think this necessarily will, because he has way more heart than Yasiel Puig, who is just another, you know, egotistical person in their locker room or in their clubhouse. But I forget even what inning it was. I just saw the highlight on MLB. But where he just lets balls just drop in front of him, he does not try at all. Like, maybe it was Vasquez. Like, he made that hit, it went into right, and then he benefited from Puig's laziness and not want... Puig could have probably easily caught that ball, but he just has no hustle. You know, no hustle, no... I don't know. But not that JD would do that necessarily. You know, not that he wouldn't have the hustle, just not the ability of the outfielders, you know, of Benintendi, of Betts, you know, of Bradley Jr., you know, out there. You know, I hate to see, you know, it be a one-run game and have it be something like that. So that was just the reason for that question. But I think they're going to win, you know, on small ball hits. Sure, they're going to get home runs. They're going to be flashy. The Dodger fans are going to cheer. It's going to be, you know, what it's going to be. But at the end of the day, it's singles, it's doubles, you know, that win games. It's walks. It's getting people on base. It's not always home runs.
Well said.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The big thing with Puig is he plays an extremely deep outfield, and there are you look not that I can compare because I played Division III baseball, which is like pathetic to even bring it up compared to what these guys are doing. But I played a deep left field because I sucked going over my head to catch fly balls. So I had to make that step of playing deep because the reward of playing shallow was not worth the risk of a ball going over my head because I just never tracked it well. So I don't know if Puig is, the major league version of my Division III self, but that could be a factor where, like Johnny Damon, for example, always played a historically shallow center field. And that was because he felt really, really confident going above, tracking a ball over his head. Bradley Jr. obviously has no issue tracking a ball over his head. So a lot of that depends on, a specific athlete's ability to track a ball that he's got to actually go run after instead of run towards. So I think that's a factor. Obviously, like Vasquez hit a ball to right that dropped in front of Puig that I thought some right fielders may have made a play on. I thought the JD hit to right that scored two would have been an out with Betts in right field. I just thought that was a ball that he made no effort to really go get. Terry?
I made the same observation and it dropped and luckily. But and even like a Tampa Bay Rays outfield would have been all over that, you know.
Not only that, but he didn't necessarily attack that ball where just picking on the little things. One, he didn't attack that ball enough to throw the second runner out, and I know there were two outs, so fine, like he's off on the contact and that runner's not gonna hesitate around third. But Pierce was running at first, and I watched the broadcast, and I saw the highlight from the right field cameraman. He didn't necessarily have to give up on that to Pierce on third base. He made no effort to cut him down. So, look, I thought Puig sucked in that whole entire situation. I thought he sucked in the Vasquez base hit. He basically dumped into right. I didn't think he gave a ton of effort tonight, and I know he had a hit. And an RBI, but I think Liz, to your credit, I think you highlighted that a different right fielder there may have had a different effect on that whole situation, and I think frankly with our team, the Red Sox, Betts would have had a different effect on that. I think he would have won, either caught the ball or two, been in a position to go throw and make a difference. Puig, in both of the situations I've discussed, basically just fielded it and flipped it back into the infield.
Yeah. Yeah, he's extremely lackluster. And before we get too far away from you mentioning Johnny Damon, like, I would be remiss, and this is going to make me sound like a Red Sox fan, but one of my favorite movies is Fever Pitch.
Maybe because you are a Red Sox fan.
No. But whenever, when you said Johnny Damon, all I could think of was that scene where that lady, one of the season ticket holders, goes, "Johnny Damon, you got the it was one of the actual like fans. I just don't remember her name, but she's like, "Johnny Damon, you got the sweetest ass in the league." That's all. Like,
I do remember in Fever Pitch. I know exactly. What you're talking.
Oh man, we watch that movie like all the time. Not because I'm a Red Sox fan, because I'm a baseball fan.
Yeah.
And my husband is almost the equivalent to, like, as far as like the Steelers and the Penguins goes, except for like. He didn't have like a little boy's like bedroom. He didn't have all the stuff like Jimmy Fallon did. But essentially, my life revolves around those things. In fact, when we're in Kentucky, like, our only plans on Sunday, there was no Steeler bar in Lexington, and we're flying out of Louisville anyway. So we're driving back to Louisville, staying the night in Louisville Sunday night just because there's a Steeler bar there, and we're gonna go watch with our people. So.
Yeah, That's too bad that you're a Steelers fan. That's all I'll say about that.
Hey, I married into it. You know,
Does it make it right, Liz?
I mean, he's got to accept some things about me. I got to accept some things about him. There's give and take. That's how these things work. So I went in with open arms. They've been nothing but great to me, so I can't complain. My wedding colors were black and yellow. We came out to Renegade. Oh. It was the whole nine yards. I was like, rough. Hey, if this is what makes you happy, then I'm totally fine with that. So,
well, we'll get this thing wrapped up, I guess.
Before this becomes a football
podcast. Anyway, no, sorry, yeah, I totally won't go into any of that.
No, it's all good. But we've kind of covered it, you know, what we feel like may or may not happen. I don't think we're coming back to Fenway. Jeremy, you think there's a reasonable chance it could happen.
I just think the Dodgers are talented enough to certainly win one. I think there's going to be a game they hit three or four home runs. So it just depends on whether they can do it twice. And I don't... Honestly, Terry, I picked the Sox in six. If I could amend my prediction, I'd say Sox in five.
Yeah, that sounds more likely to me, but we'll see how it goes. Any final thoughts, Liz?
Sox in five. I think they probably will win one as well, but I think they're not getting far.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Price's one sale, you know, was gritty enough to keep us in the game so we could win that one. I think it ends in L.A. So thanks for coming on, and we'll figure out the rest of the schedule as we go. So have a good night.
Terry, Liz, thank you guys.
No, thank you guys. I probably won't be back, and you know, until whenever there's, if you guys do anything in the off season or perhaps next year, since I'm occupado all weekend. But and it pains me to say it, but go Sox.
I don't think it pains her to say that, by the way.
Sure, have a good night, guys.
All right, good night, guys.
Game two in the book. Sox up 2-0. As good of a start as we could hope, and like I said in my game-ending tweet, it feels an awful lot like 2004. So have a good day off tomorrow. I think everybody's happy to probably get some sleep, although tonight's game did end at a more reasonable time, but... go to bed whenever you want tomorrow night, and enjoy your morning and afternoon before then. Have a good one.
Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of a Red Sox nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. Walk through the days when there's a West Coast swing, married to the TV and the radio. For tickets in October, I'd give anything. Still paying Red Sox debts from long ago.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.